Years have caused confusion. Oh, precious boy.
I'm here. Well, hello, everyone. Well, what are some other ones that people do? Well, obviously, there's the Dutton. Hello, hello, hello. Hello, hello, hello. What are some other ones? Morgoth does. Well, hello there, folks. Hello there, folks. what are some other ones? Mercurius. Good day. Good day. what are some other ones that people have? Those are the ones I can remember from now. Hello everyone, and I am just basically doing the stream equivalent of a goblin raid. It's the goblins. I want to get in and get out in an hour. Goblin raid of a stream. For various different reasons, I can't do my usual slot tomorrow. And I know that Monday night is usually chock-a-block. I know that various people stream on Monday nights at 7 o'clock and at 8, etc. So I want to try to get in and out. I don't know if Scrump and Evelyn are going at 7. And I know that they already clash with at least one other person. So I want to try to like get in and out in an hour. The goblin raid. Attack of the goblins, goblin mode. The goblins. Yeah, you know, in a video game, I have never once gone as the goblins. If the goblins are available in a game like Blood Bowl or Warhammer or D&D or whatever, I have never once played willingly as goblins. I'll usually go for, I like undead. I made a video about playing as the undead before. I'd play as dwarves or as humans before I play as goblins. I never willingly will play as goblins or orcs, right? Orcs. I'll never choose like an orc character or a halfling or anything like that. I always play either as a human evil mage, undead, or some other races I play as. The only game where I've ever actually played as an orc is Warcraft 3, because the storyline basically forces you for a period to play as orcs, right? So anyway, it's one of those things. Yeah, I'll play as a necromancer. Usually in most RPGs I'll play as a human wizard. A human wizard who specializes in damage spells, fireball, you know, direct damage spells. But I will play as undead as well, depending on the circumstances. Anyway, given that I want to get over and done with in an hour, I'll just remind people, promo code MERIT gets you 25% off all courses. And if you're bored of that, you can play a little game. Would you or wouldn't you? This woman. Do you remember that? Would you or wouldn't you? She's still on my... I just spotted her on my overlay thing. Yes or no? You can think about that as the Jordan Peterson advert plays. Anyway, 25% off all courses.
Merit. Pure merit. Such merit. Merit. Such merit. Merit. Such merit. Merit. Such merit. Merit, 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 such merit.
Now you may mock, O ye of little faith, but Jordan Peterson has actually succeeded in his battle against the woke, because today it was revealed that, just pull this up here, on 60 Minutes, instead of considering DEI, that is diversity, equality, and inclusion, the new University of Austin emphasizes what we call MEI, merit, excellence, and intelligence. So finally, where is he? Finally.
Up yours, woke moralists. We'll see who cancels who.
So, yes, merit is back, friends. The first thing I want to talk about is what I've got in the title here. Progressive liberals have zero answers to the populist narrative. What am I talking about? I actually have in mind a thread by Labour MP Clive Lewis, right? Clive Lewis. Clive Lewis, if you don't know him, is a repugnant leftist, quasi-communist, race-grifting, New Statesman writing, recalcitrant wanker who deserves your ire and hate, okay? Yet, Clive Lewis has done that rarest of things. He has produced something on the left worth reading. So let me have a little read of this tweet storm that Clive Lewis set off, which I think is pretty interesting because, as I have titled this stream, it suggests that progressive liberals have zero answers to the populist narrative. Let me just read Clive Lewis here. He says, this post is problematic for a number of reasons. A thread, little thread symbol. Already, there are a number of things to hate. One, the use of the word problematic. Two, the use of that little thread symbol. Both things I absolutely hate to see under usual circumstances, but anyway. One, for those attempting to make sense of Trump's victory and the rise of the far right across Europe, far right, look no further than the MP statement below. Whether you like it or not, and so cut off from this, and I'll share this with you so you can see it, is Keir Starmer having a visit from Larry Fink from BlackRock. Here, I'll just show you the original thread here. He is quote tweeting Starmer on this BlackRock visit, okay? Now, this is kind of interesting because Clive Lewis is a sitting Labour MP, which means that he is quote tweeting his boss, Keir Starmer, meeting BlackRock. Kind of interesting, isn't it? Anyway, for those attempting to make sense of Trump's victory and the rise of the far right across Europe, look no further than the MP statement below. Whether you like it or not, the far right has a set of common narratives. We can probably all recite them. Two, something like, the reason you're in an overpriced, damp rental, your gran lives in squalor, your job is low paid or insecure, and your public services crumbling is because elites declared war on the workers, favoured immigrants, and made your life more expensive with their green crap. Where's the lie, Clive? I mean, where is the lie? Yes, that is the narrative, but also it's a narrative that has the unfortunate byproduct of being true, isn't it, Clive? The green crap did make stuff more expensive, didn't it? The elites did abandon the workers, especially your elites in the Labour Party. You did abandon the workers. You did favour immigrants. Our public services are crumbling because of these things. People are on more insecure work due to these policy choices. I mean, your gran lives in squalor and Keir Starmer declared war on her. I mean, it's like, anyway, let's carry on. Three, vote for us and we will deport the immigrants, stop the elites, cut the green crap and declare war on woke and Britain will be great again. Well, it's certainly a very compelling narrative, Clive. So what's the alternative? Four, this is a story. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Or rather, it sets up the scene, explains why we are where we are and offers a solution. In other words, it has goodies, baddies, and a happy ending. Yes, Clive, and this is you doing the Mitchell and Webb, are we the bad guys? Meme, that's you. That's literally you. Are we the baddies? Jezza? Yes, Mark, I think we're the baddies. That's basically Labour at this point. Labour story, he carries on, Clive Lewis, professional moron. He says, just like the US Democrats, doesn't make narrative sense. Rather than explain how 40 years of atomizing neoliberal plunder, the selling off of and destruction of our public services, the undermining of our democracy, the hollowing out and selling off of our natural resources at the hands of companies like BlackRock, another price gouging corporation, billionaires and financial institutions has led us here. Instead, we refuse to give a credible explanation for how we got here other than it was Tory chaos. Problem is, when the political and economic perma-crisis continues, that won't be a viable explanation. Smart cookie, eh, Clive? Maybe more than 95 IQ racking around, funny enough. By refusing to identify who the culprits for this state of affairs is, wonder who you're talking about, we fail to make a convincing narrative story that explains our predicament. Instead, we become the defenders of the very elites, the business-as-usual brigade, that the right claim we are, even though the far right themselves are a core part of the very establishment that champion these policies. What? Therefore, we either develop a story as the agents of progressive change, identifying those responsible and pledging to fix it, or we make way for the inevitability of a far-right victory, just like the US. So there you've got it. Clive Lewis basically has no answers whatsoever. Clive Lewis, MP, basically says, actually, the people we're calling far-right are basically correct in every single way. We don't have any narrative counter to that. Therefore, they are inevitable and we are going to lose. I'll take it. I'll take it. Well done. Well done, Clive. Thumbs up to Clive Lewis. And that thread right there is why, at the moment, you've got the Young Turks, you know, Cenk or whatever his name is, right? And Anna Kasparian, and I know Chris Gard loves her. And my own best new BFF forever, right? Our own ice cream Bastani himself. Why they are sidling over, why they're starting to signal, because they know they're on the wrong side. They figured out, oh shit, all the political energy is over here. We backed the wrong horse and we're basically on team evil elite right now. And I mean, Bastani, I mean, one of the things that's been happening online is that, it's pronounced junk. Okay, sorry, it's not Cenk, it's junk. Okay, fair enough. Bastani, right, he is a clever operator, is Bastani, because he runs Navarra Media, which is the biggest alternative left media platform in Britain. And he knows, as well as we all do, that if he just started hanging out with us or coming over to our side, his audience would just they just tear him down. Okay, he'd never live it because he's built up an audience out of Ash, literally a communist sucker, right? That's how he's built his audience over time. But anybody paying any attention knows that Bastani sees the writing on the wall and he's trying to sidle over. Well, now, one of the interesting developments on Twitter is that my buddy Drupka, who is the starter of many a meme online, Drupka, right? Has basically started this idea called Berber Jacket Nationalism, I think it is. And, you know, he's basically, there's this meme, it's actually hit like the mainstream media, that if you wear one of these barber jackets, Berber jackets, I'm not sure how you say it, you know, it's like the kind of country jacket that Nigel Farage wears, that you're signaling basically allegiance to the quote-unquote far right, okay? And Drupko is a very impish character on Twitter, and just very playfully pushes these things along, okay? I am good buddies with him or her. Rumor has it that Drupko is secretly a hot Lebanese girl, but whether Drupko's a girl or a boy, I've always got on well with this character and as one of the funniest accounts. Well, anyway, in the middle of all of that, this actually became, here's an example, right? Here's an example of Drupko pushing this. So yeah, the Berber jacket, okay? Barber jacket nationalism. So you can see the sort of thing that Drupko is pushing, okay? And in the middle of all of that, I couldn't help but notice that old Aaron Ice Cream, he just did the equivalent of what I would consider a dog whistle, right? Because he knows, well, okay, I'll just put it this way. He knows that we read him, and we know that he reads us, okay? This is like one of those weird little things that's going on. But I couldn't help but notice that he signaled his allegiance to this. Let me show you. Fake news, some things are bigger than... There he is, wearing his barber jacket, look. Right, so he is doing the equivalent. He's kind of doing a little dog whistle to say, actually, I might be with Team Barber here. I might actually sidle over and side with the Kulaks and the evil rightists against this lot, because he can see where the winds are blowing, as can the Young Turks, as can Anna Kasparian, as can, Cenk and various other opportunist leftist scumbags. Okay, we can see it happening, and we also know that conservatives are such dribbling idiots that as soon as this happens, they'll throw open the doors for them. Oh, Anna, have a show on Fox News. Oh, Anna, have your own Rumble show. Aaron Bastani, let's put you on GB News front and center. You know they'll do that. So it's actually quite a lucrative move for a leftist to sidle over, because they'll face no resistance. They'll just be welcomed with open arms. You know, they'll bring all of their politics with them. But there we are. So these things are happening. Developments, and Clive Lewis, who's actually a sitting MP, basically has said, "Well, the writing is on the wall. The right have basically won on the narrative. We've got nothing, and we're getting to the point where leftists are basically, you know, they're sidling over. They're playing footsie. Let's face it, that's what they're doing." I actually gave advice to Aaron Bastani. I wrote under one of his tweets, I said, listen, if Bastani had a long-term vision, like Alex Ferguson had to sell David Beckham at the peak of his fame, David Beckham was sold by Manchester United to Real Madrid. Do you remember the hairdryer treatment that Ferguson gave Beckham, threw the football boot across the room at Beckham? Do you remember? Nobody's bigger than the club, Beckham. Okay? You can have your posh spice and your fucking media career and your adverts. You don't bring that shit here, Bex. Off to Real Madrid with you. That is what Bastani should do to Sarkar. I know she's his big star. I know Sarkar, you know, brings in the merch and so on. But that was yesterday. Got to embrace the future, and you've got to make a bold move. There needs to be a Navarra Media revamp, Ice Cream. Get rid of Sarkar. I'm literally a communist. I tell you what, do a swap deal. Do a swap deal with Young Turks. Send Sarkar to the Young Turks. Bring in Anna Kay. Anna Kay can do a job in midfield, right? She may be past her best, but she can still do a job. She's got very good, she reads the game really well, Anna Kay. Bring her in. All right. Let us now hit I don't know. It's quite fun, kind of backseat. What do they call it? Backseat quarterbacking. Navarra Media. Navarra Media plays. anyway, let us now have a look at the super thanks, and then we'll do super chats. And if we're any luck, we'll be out of here in 1 hour. The Goblin Raid. All right. So on last week's office hours, which was only a few days back, friend Jemin Church says, in AA interacting with curries with zero counterparty activity for months. NHS interacting with AA with zero counterparty activity for months. If I know anything about our NHS, somewhere there's a curries employee trying to get an appointment with no counterparty response for months. Well, I've got more on the curry story, but I'm going to save it for Deepest Law Adam Curtis banter, our prima, because it's a narrative. I've really been telling the curries story with Simon Roberts, so we'll save the exciting denouement of the story for Wednesday. What else have we got? There's been a few, actually. Inside the Mind of a Leftist. Bloody hell, that's an old video. That's one of my old classics. Debunked, we looked inside Keir Starmer's head and we found nothing. Good morning, AA. This is on four ways Trump's cabinet picks are tearing the online right apart, which was my breakdown of what's happening over on the American right. I have to say, by the way, since that aired, I've been continuing to follow the discourse and listen to various people. And I'm finding myself siding more and more with Devin Stack, I'm afraid, but with Black Pill. I listened to his appearance on Adam Green, and they were just running down each and every pick and running through the stuff they'd said. And I'm going to be honest, they sound mental. Every single one of them sound cloud cuckoo mental to me, each one of these picks. And the more you find out about them, the more they sound crazy. But anyway, he says, good morning, AA, says NNKM. Can the regime keep welshing on these foreign policy for domestic policy deals and still effectively employ containment? Well, that's a very interesting question. Because basically, they can, every time they do it, the public get a bit more jaded and a bit less trusting next time. However, looking how things have gone in America, yeah, probably. Because it's like nobody learns anything ever. We've lived through Trump first term, Maloney, Boris Johnson, Geert Wilders in Netherlands. Like, we've seen all this stuff play out. And people still argue for the same gambit. This time, it's going to be different. This time, they're not going to welsh on the deal. Oh, right. How's that? Oh, fairy magic, basically. Fairy dust and magic. Wishful thinking. Oh, this time it's different. This time it's different because Elon Musk. This time it's different because Trump was almost shot. Pick a reason. But that's basically what is being spun now. What to me were a very interesting signal was that X22 report was brought back to Twitter. Now, if you don't know X22 report, X22 is Q central. It is literally Q-tard central. And I mean, mock X22 while you want. He gets an audience of 720,000 people. X22 report is single-handedly bigger than the entire quote-unquote DR or dissident right alone. Boomers absolutely love X22. And it's funny because I was just listening to Devin Stack on that Adam Green thing, and Devin Stack was saying that his next door neighbor is a boomer who watched X-22. And then one day, like after Joe Biden's inauguration, after none of the stuff came true, this boomer said to Devin Stack, all right, it was all bullshit then. All right then, okay. But Devin said, like, he is completely back on the X-22 train now. Same guy. And I couldn't help but laugh because Green said, imagine your next door neighbor is Devin Stack and you're still that boomery. You know, there's no hope, there's no learning. Nobody ever learns anything. So I'm increasingly leaning that way, to be honest, the way things are going. Obviously, everything needs to play out. So, you know, I've said what I've said on these matters. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's looking more like for me, the big thing was Matt Gaetz. Matt Gaetz is my favorite American politician. He's probably my favorite politician in Western politics because he's my age. He's fearless. He plays friend enemy. He didn't take any money from AIPAC. And, you know, he's a solid guy, right? Okay, he's had a few slip-ups. So he had that line about not needing the Karens because of Jamal and all that sort of stuff. Everybody's allowed a few, you know, cringe moments or whatever. Generally, I like Matt Gaetz. When Matt Gaetz just, like, immediately capitulated, and now there's all this, oh, well, is he going to be appointed as a special counsel? Is he going to come back as a senator or as a governor of a state or something? It's just like, you know, Gaetz was the one. Gaetz was the one I was excited by, and it's not him. You know, they replaced him with this woman now. And I actually made a tweet about this because I feel very strongly about Matt Gaetz. I said, I'll just share my post about this because I think it's important. I said the personal is the political. When men see Gaetz, they see themselves. When they see him replaced by Britney Spears, they see only a woman. These things do matter. It matters that specifically Gaetz won't be the Attorney General. It's a letdown for the chuds, for the gamers, and gamer words. It doesn't matter who this woman is. She wasn't Gaetz. She didn't have Gaetz's spunk, his fighting spirit, his masculine energy. I don't want Gaetz to be a pundit. I don't want him to be a congressman. I don't know. I want him to be the AG. Not going to get that now. So, you know, and look, you can look at it two ways, right? You can basically get all your hopes up and have them dashed and then feel crushingly disappointed and then be blackpilled. Or you can have basically no expectations and be pleasantly surprised. Okay? So at the moment, I have zero expectations and I'm waiting to be pleasantly surprised. And I'd actually rather it that way round than continually be blue-balled and kicked in the nuts again and again. I allowed myself to be excited when I saw Gaetz, and within days, I was like, oh, fuck, there we go. I got excited, and now I've been kicked in the nuts again. I'm not having it. I'm not having 4 years of, oh, but actually, it was 4D chess, or you don't sit. Like, honestly, if I wanted that, I just sit and watch Styx Hexenhammer 24/7, because that's basically every Styx video ever, isn't it? Oh, well, actually, it was a secret 42G chess move. And, you know, really what Trump was doing was this. Like, fuck it. I'm not having it. Or I can't be doing with it. I mean, if there's one thing I've learned in the history of running this channel, whenever I have even set a tiny foot on the Trump train, I end up getting burnt with bullshit. Okay. I remember, there was a storyline about releasing the Pfizer memo or something. And I made a video on that and it got me engagement. I was like, oh yeah, this is exciting. No payoff, didn't go anywhere, blue balled, bullshit, you know. And it's the same the other way around. It's the same for the blue anon. The walls are closing in. No, it fucking wasn't. He was never going to go to jail. It's all bullshit. Anything in and around Trump ends up getting you perpetually kind of on this kind of train where your gratification is delayed again and again, and you're always waiting. It's always like, well, just wait. It's just one, just a couple, this will be the next thing. I'm not doing it. I can't be doing with it. And I'm not playing that game anymore. Gate was the last straw for me. Just, you know, that's it. I'm not doing it. So anyway, let's continue. And I think I made that video before that news about Gates, because that video was 5 days ago. That video about Gates, that news about Gates had not kind of broken at that point when I made that video. So, yeah. Alphonse writes again there, says, these huge housing developments and population transfers started after the war with movement of huge parts of the Cockney underclass into council houses in rural England. Even today, some of these families remain in semi-criminal underclass, not integrated into the core rural population who have lived there for centuries. And these are white British people who speak English. Yeah, that's an interesting little story there. I guess you're talking about the Essex man, right? The Essex people. Yeah. AA's 1995 teacher opens legs. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I think I did that because I remember the name. I remember the name of that one. Alphonse Rise again. This is on, will the global economy collapse in 2025? That was the Black Horse guest video, which has proven to be rather controversial, to say the least. But in my view, regardless of whatever anybody says or anybody cries about, that is a binary question. One guy says the global economy is going to collapse next year. Another guy, who also happens to be a finance dude for a living, says, no, it's not because of X and Y. Okay. We'll know, right? I mean, it's November 24. We've got about a month until 2025. And then there are 12 months. And within that 12 months, we'll find out. As far as I'm concerned, there's no point arguing about that anymore. Like, this dude says this is going to happen for these reasons. Dude A. Dude B says no, because of these reasons. We'll find out soon enough. You know, if anybody knows any gold ISAs, let me know. Maybe I'll do the Judge Knapp thing and invest in gold while the going's good. Alphonse Rides again says, in your view, AA, does America's military and political domination of Europe suppress the dynamism of European economies? Yes. Yes is the answer. The best book on this is Vassal State, a recent book on Britain being America's vassal. And he does a really good job in there of showing all of the issues that arise, basically, when foreign companies, as opposed to homegrown companies, are running things in your country, where you don't have the HQ located in your own country. And he does a very, very good job of explaining that in the first couple of chapters. I may do a Monday, when I get a chance, I'll do a Monday reading from Vassal State, I think, because it's a good, pretty convincing. And it goes into things that you don't talk about. It like seldom is ever talked about, you know. Harrison Wade 999 says, this is again on the four ways Trump's cabinet picks are tearing the online world apart. He says, your value-free analysis of this was invaluable to me. Well, thank you very much, Harrison. And I mean, what I try to do as much as possible is let people decide where they fall and just try to make it clear where the fault lines are. Okay. Yeah, like I said, in the week since I've made that video, I've listened to more stuff and I've seen more things happen. And the combination of a couple of details from Devon on that Adam Green screen that I didn't know before, and the Matt Gaetz fallout has pushed me more on that side. For good or for bad, I was a Gaetz guy, and that's kind of pissed me off, really, that that's happened. Trump could get it back by putting him in a non-confirmation role. right? Special counsel, for example. I mean, I joked on Twitter saying that he should make him the special counsel of being based, or he could stick him in the executive office of the president, which is where a lot of the, like where Elon Musk is, for example. Just give him his own department like that. If none of those things happen, that will be just a waste. Now, Cringe Walker says that Gates is actually done. He's being put out to pasture. And this was a way of him retiring with dignity. I don't want Gates retired. He's only my age. Gates has got 30 years, 40 years left in him. And he's still hungry and he's got fire. So don't give me all this vengeful son bullshit if Gates is out. The vengeful son thing can only be in if Gates is in. Right? So I'm pretty annoyed about the Gates thing. I'll be honest. Now that's not value free. That's just my own personal preferences. But also the value free thing I'm getting is Ben Shapiro happy? Yes. Are the Chuds happy? No. Is Ben Shapiro happy with this pick? Yes. Are the Chuds happy? No. Were the Chuds happy with Matt Gaetz? Yes. They were fucking over the moon. Was Ben Shapiro and the Swamp happy when Gaetz stepped down? Yes. They were absolutely over the moon. In fact, the regime was doing victory laps over victory laps over victory laps. And again, it just looks, it's like, here we go round the mulberry bush for the 100th time. You know, it'd be nice to think that Team Trump were prepared for this, but it seems like they weren't. Captain Smith, this was on the Great Jaguar Swerve video I made. It was already known that Jaguar are completely changing their product line. The storm from the ad just means more people know about this. The concept car will be some futuristic-looking thing that won't be for sale, but it will hint at a style of the first model coming in 2026. The situation is not comparable to Bud Light. This is a £130,000 electric car, not a mass market product. These higher priced EVs, Jag, are actually targeting a different market from what they had before, not just the same beer in a woke can. Pretty good. Now, I am not 100% committed to this idea that Jaguar are going to swerve, right? I just think that it looks like they're gearing up to swerve. And when I put that video out, a lot of people linked me to other people who have been saying this, like marketing experts. There's this one guy I was linked to who had a really similar take, saying like, you're being worked, basically. This is a hoax, he called it. And there are a number of other people, insiders and so on, saying like, yeah, we haven't seen the end of this story yet. All I know is that 150 million eyeballs were on that advert, if analytics are to be believed. So people were talking about it. It got interventions from major political figures like Nigel Farage, which I'll talk about on my video tomorrow. No butt in cans says, good show. This was a comment on the ABCs of Writer's Thought in one brilliant book. That was Mike earlier on today. Mike is always an excellent guest with interesting insights. His book will give me something to read over Christmas. On the topic of cultured thugs, do you think you'll ever do a culture video on Bowden's films, AA? Well, having seen Bowden's films, almost certainly not. I don't know what the hell they are, what they're trying to do. But I do have stuff on Bowden in the back catalogue for channel members. If you go in the Cigar Stream archive, there was a huge five-hour stream on Bowden in there. And the Mike's book is brilliant. It really is brilliant. It's essential. But get it for, if you've got like a friend who's semi-red-pilled or whatever, or if you yourself don't know what we're talking about half the time, just buy and read that book, or buy that book and give it to a mate or whatever. It's he's done a really good service there. So, all right, let's have a look at Entropy. My dream of the hour, Goblin Raid, is still possible. Coney says, why are America elites planning to do Glasnost and Perestroika with Trump? but elites are going ahead with the techno-globalist five-year plan. Well, Coney, I believe this is explained by the fact that there is a split between the Zionists and the techno-globalists. And America is a Zionist stronghold, and Britain is a techno-globalist stronghold. This much is obvious. And Starmer showed, didn't he? He showed his hand during the election that he sides with Kamala Harris. It's obvious that their man, the same people who are backing Trump, their man in Britain is Nigel Farage. And as I'll talk about in a video tomorrow, I think the media now are pushing Nigel Farage. At the exact moment Farage has become wet, weak, pathetic, a disappointment, a sellout, just hideous, hideously disappointing. Now the media are basically propping him up and presenting Farage as the alternative to the disastrous Starmer government. That's not an accident, right? Farage is being put front and center. Do the Google check. Do all of my tricks, right? When there's a question in the headline, the answer's always no, right? Well, do that with Farage and see that they're positioning the questions to give Farage as the answer to Starmer. Even Sky News and BBC are doing this, which is always a tell to me. How does that happen, though, if here is a techno-globalist stronghold? And I can only guess that's because some people embedded in the system are actually on the other team. Or they're actually on the Zio team, basically, right? Always two breads there are in the sandwich, yes? Coney says, number one, in the past 14 years, we've had, as leader of this country, a Bullingdon Club Etonian wet, an idiot closeted green activist, another Bullingdon Club Etonian wet, LARPing as Winston Churchill. An idiot who lasted less than a shelf life of a cabbage, a nerdy brown colonial manager of UK LTD, and a complete fucking psycho. Yeah, that's the tall and short of it. I honestly think with Liz Truss is like when there was a glitch in the Matrix and all of a sudden, suddenly, and by total accident, a complete and total normie found themselves in the position of Prime Minister. And the system went, oh, the fuck did this happen? She's not just a normie. She's just like an actual normie. Like, imagine going to, you know, like in Waitrose or Marks and Spencer's, they sometimes have the cafe area, right? And you pick up a cup of tea or a sandwich or something in the cafe area of the supermarket and you go and sit down. Liz Truss is like the woman that you'd meet randomly having her own cup of tea there. Be like, oh, hey, Liz, do you want to... And it would be like getting that person and sticking them in number 10. Of course she was not going to last. Anyway. More about Starmer tomorrow. I've got a video tomorrow where I'm particularly angry at Nigel Farage. All of my videos this week, I don't know if I was in a bad mood last night, but they're all pretty angry. Rundown of my upcoming content. I've got Keir Starmer is the most hated PM in decades, yet Nigel Farage is not stepping up. That's tomorrow's video. Wednesday's video, which is something of a main event, because I possibly my angriest video of all time is called What is Slop and What is Not Slop? That's a kind of can't miss one, I reckon. Thursday is the nuclear bomb paradox, where I talk about why nobody's acting as if nuclear bombs are real. And then on Friday, I have the follow-up to my 10 essential things you need to become a YouTuber video, which a surprising number of people found helpful. A lot of people in the comments to that wanted to see, can you show us what your workflow is, right? So the Friday video is literally just a video on YouTube workflow as the kind of culture video this week. And next week, I'm hoping to do a video on TV tropes. You know that website, TV Tropes? I'm a big fan of that website. And I want to do a video breaking down all the different, you know, like when you have a team, like the Thundercats or the A-Team or the Ghostbusters, there are tropes in every team on TV. Like you get a deadpan snarker, but you also get kind of one who's a bit cheeky, right? You get different characters that reoccur over and over again. And I thought it'd be interesting to dig into the deep archetypes, the TV tropes. The old guy, you can say it's peak Reddit, right? Trabant, but maybe once in a while Reddit actually stumbles on something that's true. And I've always been interested, like, for example, why is it that in every team there was a smart guy, right? There was always the technical smart guy. In Turtles, it was Donatello, right? In Alvin and the Chipmunks, it was Simon. In Ghostbusters, it was Egon Spengler, right? Every team has got a smart guy. Even in Friends, Ross Geller was the smart one. There's always a smart guy in the TV crew. I'm interested by that. I'm interested why they always set it up in that way. Just as there's always a Daria or a Peter Venkman or a, you know, the deadpan snarker. There's always that character too. And then you get some crews where basically everybody's a smart guy, like the A-Team. Pretty much everybody's a smart guy. Who's the smart guy in the A-Team? Hannibal, I guess, right? Hannibal. But they're all kind of smart guys, really. Well, it's not, I mean, this is the thing. It's not just Friends. It's any TV show where you have a crew, you get the same recurring tropes. Like the deadpan snarker in Friends is Chandler. He's the deadpan snarker. And you also get female archetypes too. Like there's like a kind of bossy bitch, that's Monica, and I forget them now. I will do that. AA is the smart one in the team of himself. I would suggest that in any team configuration, I would usually be the smart guy. But the smart guy can also be a deadpan snarker. So it's possible that I would also double up as a deadpan snarker, right? But there's a big guy. Big guy is a team role. Like Panthro in Thundercats was a big guy. B.A. Baracus in A-Team was a big guy. You always get a big guy, right? You always get fat kind of joke character. Ray Stantz was fat, and he was kind of like the butt of the jokes. Snarf in Thundercats. Shaggy and Scooby were kind of this character. There's always like some character who likes eating, you know? Theodore in Alvin and the Chipmunks just liked eating. That was his deal, you know? And I'm trying to think, like, and you also get characters who are like generic good guy, and some crews are just all of that, like that generic good guy. They're just good. Lion-O, I guess, is a bit like that. Lion-O is a bit headstrong, maybe. He's a bit of a headstrong ace, but I think that would be a fun video to do. Velma was the smart guy. Velma was not morbidly obese, she was the smart guy. Come on. In the Scooby-Doo crew, Velma was the smart guy. I'm trying to think of some other ones now. There's so many of them. You see, this is why I'm really interested in the why is it? What was the structural and the ideological role played by the fact that you always get these same characters reoccurring over and over again? Like the kind of boring good guy in Turtles was Leonardo. He was the hero. He was the one that leads, but he's kind of a bit boring, you know? let's carry on. I love TV tropes. But that video will take a while to make, and you're going to have to keep reminding me because I have to do the pro wrestling glossary as well, which will also take a long time. Maybe that will be in like two Fridays time or whatever. I'm an int J. So if Velma types as an int J, I would be Velma in the Scooby-Doo crew. Maybe I could recreate Scooby-Doo with the Lotus Eaters guys. You'd have to like figure out like who would be the Scooby and Shaggy. I don't know how you'd make it all out, you know. But I mean, I guess Carl would have to be Freddy, wouldn't he? And you see, Freddy was kind of boring good, wasn't he? He was just the good guy, good like solid hero. No basic, no discernible characteristics, really. So, anyway, Fred was just boring good. So, anyway, look, TV Tropes is not the slop. It's not the slop. TV Tropes is not the slop. TV Tropes has genuinely deep insights into culture. Tomorrow, on Wednesday, I will explain exactly what is slop and what is not slop. TV Tropes cannot be, because it is actually getting at the archetypical core of what is buried in the popular culture. It teases them out. And what I'm interested in is, why are they there? What else is it saying? Okay, so maybe your Reddit tier guy, because he's a midwit, just kind of stops at pointing them out. But I'm not your Reddit tier guy. I'm me. I've got triple digit IQ. If you add out the numbers of my IQ, it comes up to quite high. So I'm going to have more interesting things to say about it, aren't I? Yeah? Or have you got a problem with that? Because, remember, I put up a thing yesterday saying, listen, I'm now on minus 15 tolerance, right? Minus 15 tolerance. That means that I can get preemptively annoyed. Before, it used to be, if you piss me off, you get banned. Now it's like I'm actually looking for an active excuse to ban you. A number of people replied to that saying, oh, you can ban me then, and I banned them. I reckon about 30 people have been banned replying to that thread in various snarky ways. I've been watching you for years. I've been watching you for 6 years. Dare not say anything, but you might as well ban me. Banned. It's just like, you know, there's no like, I'm actually looking for a reason. This is an active banning approach. You know, I actively don't want you commenting. So I'm going to see how much we can do this. You know, thousands must be banned. Anyway, let's carry on. Wablu says, hey, AA, I watched your video on schools of the right, and you said you were skeptical of futurism, by which I think you mean right-wing technophilia. Can you expand on this, since these types are usually ethnats? Yeah, I can. This again is a video I may make next week. There's this thing going around called Anglo-futurism, right? Anglo-futurism. And I was shocked to see one of the advocates of this Anglo-futurist idea saying, actually, Keir Starmer was right to declare war on the farmers. Actually, the farmland is wasted at the moment, and it needs to be swept aside so that we can build several new cities and get the population up to 200 million. Now, if you have to ask me why that sort of thing doesn't belong on the right, then maybe you don't belong on the right. If you have to ask me why that is a fucking terrible idea, you maybe belong over the other side of the aisle, sitting on a fucking rainbow dildo next to Tom Harwood. But anyway, I might actually do a video looking seriously at this plan to go to 100% import food economy and grow the population to 200 million. Press one if that's what you want to see. Press one if that vision is what brought you to the dance. Or press two if you think that sounds like an absolute dystopia. QWERTY7 says, why do they have no answer for the populist position? Is it structural, or are they just a few wrinkles too few to pull off the win? I think, really, QWERTY, it comes down to this problem that the left have. It comes down to the problem. So anybody who pressed one is banned. And because it's going too fast, I will have to wait until the stream comes back up, right? Until the stream comes back up and the live chat reloads, and I will sit down and autistically go through and pick out the ones. Oh, it was a joke. Oh, I was just joking. I was just pretending to be a moron. Don't pretend. So, but anyway, to answer your question, QWERTY, I think it was because the left struggle with the notion that they are in power. Okay, their basic position is that they are not in power, that actually it is the evil banks who are in power. And the trouble is, that is true. They're actually correct about that. The left is not in power, and the evil banks are in power. The trouble is that the Labour Party answers to the banks the same as everyone else. So how do they square the circle of coming up with a narrative? And let's not forget, woke was pretty much generated because the left went anti-one percenter before. I know people have got various explanations for that, but let's face it, they stopped doing the Occupy Wall Street thing and they started talking about white privilege. So the system doesn't really want the left looking at Larry Fink. Whether they're going to be able to stop that, I don't know. So the reason that the left have no answer to the populist position is because the left's authentic position is the populist position. The left should also be against the elites, and they should be for the people. That's what leftism is meant to be about. It just so happens the elites are the bankers. The bankers, the bonuses, the bankers, the bonuses. Sam153 says, AA, what do you think of Vlad's new toy that he displayed last week? The West seems to have no equivalent nor answer to this. Well, thank you very much, Sam153. It means so much. Just so happens, before I came on air, I listened to Alistair Crook on the Judge app. One of the few people I make sure I listen to every single week without fail. And he was explaining about this, and I didn't... It's interesting. It may have made my Thursday video on the nuclear bomb paradox redundant before it even airs, because Crook was saying that what Vlad has done, basically, with these new ballistic missiles that he's launched... In fact, he launched ICBMs. So basically, the container that would have a nuclear warhead on it, but he just stuck conventional bombs on top, not nukes. And what Crook was saying is that he has basically caught them on the hop here, because the escalatory ladder, right, which is, you know, how you keep on going up the escalation of war, well, the next stage up was basically nukes. And everybody was like, well, surely Putin can't go to nukes. But now he's found a way out of that, right? He's found a way out. So by using these ICBMs with conventional warheads. Kind of interesting. Coney says, Frederick List economics video when? I do want to do that. That will be a Monday video when I get a chance. I do have a whole bunch of videos that I want to make. One on Vassal State, one on List, etc. But things keep on coming up. People keep on bringing books out, and I've been having interviews and things like that. So things keep on coming up on Mondays. But I do want to do that at some point. Cringe Walker says, I actually apply your iron rules to predict Gates was never going to get in. You have to trust your own methods. Yes, Cringewalker, but as you know, I have retired from making predictions. I forgot about this. That has reminded me. I am no longer making any predictions. Where is my... I actually posted a video. I posted a video. Oh, what's happened here? I posted a video smashing crystal ball. Where is that video? I'm going to play it here as well. Is that crystal ball? I'm not making predictions anymore. Let me just put this on here. Just put it on here. There it is. There's crystal getting smashed. Look. Crystal ball shattered. Why am I not making predictions anymore? Well, basically, I don't like the distortive effect it has. I don't like this dynamic that comes up where I say something's going to happen based on these different variables, and then a bunch of people say, oh, AA was right, AA is vindicated, etc. I don't like it. It feels like it has the wrong energy to it. And I don't want to get into that because it distracts people from what is true, right? I want people to look at what is true, and the focus to be on that, not the focus to be on was me, academic agent, right or not right. This is a distortive lens, and it makes the story me. I am not the story. The story is the story. So for that reason, I am getting out of the habit of making predictions. No longer interested in the cigar bet. Aaron can have it. I'm not interested. If that sounds like it's not fun, well, I'm not a very fun guy. Sorry, everybody. But to me, if the bullshit produces more noise, if the bullshit discourse around that shit produces so much noise that people can't actually see what is true, it is having a counterproductive effect, and I'd rather not do it anymore. Okay, and that's what's going forward. So the last calls I'll ever make, Jaguar, the Swerve, like I said, and look, the media are sneakily pushing Nigel Farage, even though he's failing. Objectively, Farage is doing a shit job, but the media, the mainstream media, are pushing him regardless, right? Those are the two things that I'm telling people to look out for. Beyond that, I've given you the tools, you can do it yourselves. I'm out of the predictions game. I've seen, like, people just can't be honest. That's and I've got a low tolerance threshold for bullshit. Yes. Now, Cringewalker, your claim is that Gates is actually done, right? It's not just that Gates is not going to be the AG. Gates is over. He is going to retire or become a media pundit or disappear. He's certainly not acting like that on Twitter at the moment, I have to say. But his posts do seem a bit copy as well. That's funny to say, because I noticed that on one post that Gates put out, he flew the Florida flag when somebody suggested that he could become the governor of Florida. Well, obviously Ron DeSantis is the governor of Florida, so that's a weird one. And then when Cat Turd, tier one, tier two slop MAGA poster, right, suggested that he could be the special counsel, Gates responded saying, oh, well, funny thing is, Biden made it so that special counsels don't need confirmation. So that's two different things he signaled. It just smacks of a bit of desperation, right? Like that he's just flailing around trying to give hope to people, you know? Sounds like cope to me, personally. Cringewalker says, Trump was only ever a delay, a time to build. The PayPal mafia can do some things, but it's very clear the Zionists just want to get out of the spotlight and rule from the shadow for a bit. They're not really... I mean, if you watch that Devin Stack stream, they're hardly getting out of the spotlight. The people going in into Trump's cabinet may not be members of a certain group, right? But they're all very hardcore Zionists. Because guess what? You don't have to be a member of a certain group to be a Zionist. In fact, some of the most hardcore Zionists are crazy Christians, as I'm sure you know all too well. And it just so happens that many of these people that Trump is putting into his cabinet are exactly these kind of crazy Christians. End times prophecy types. You know, was it America's pastor types? You know? All of them, pretty much, come from this sort of kind of background. Isaac Johnson says, you know, the Glenn Beck thing, you know, where they're almost more pro-Israel than Israelis are. Isaac Johnson says, why did the FBI shut down the Black Return to Africa movement, AA? Given the elites were still WASPs, it doesn't really make sense to me. I don't really know. I don't know why the FBI did that. I have no inside scoop on that either. Kalev Knight says, tropes equals stereotypes of stories in a meta sense. Yes, pretty much. But tropes also they're more than stereotypes, they're archetypes. And what I'm interested in is that there are only really like 10 different characters. And I want to break it down by personality, function, right? So there's a personality type. So you could be a deadpan snarker, but your function on the team might be the smart guy, right? Or you could have a deadpan snarker whose function on the team is to be the big guy, right? Or you can have, I mean, there's all sorts of different personality types and different functions. And then on top of that, there are philosophies, right? So there is a philosophy to life thing, so there's a kind of triangle, personality, function, role, almost like D&D class. You know, are you the rogue? Are you the tank? Are you the spellcaster, etc.? And then there is philosophy, almost like your D&D alignment, you know, your lawful evil or whatever. And I really want to try to map those three things. Now, that's a lot of work, and it's very possible that come next Friday, I will not have done that because I've got more important things to do. But it's one of those things I'd like to do. David Bastilios says, what do you think of the book Standard Bearers, British Roots of the New Right? Well, I own this book, David. It is quite a rare book, quite a hard to get hold of book. And it has a chapter by Bowden in there as well. I don't really know what to think of it. I think there's some chapters on some lesser known British prime ministers in there that are kind of interesting. The chapter on Chamberlain in there is interesting, not Neville Chamberlain, but the older Chamberlain. Yeah, it's well worth reading. But I did come to the end of it thinking there's no real through line to any of these figures. They just happen to have been on the right in Britain. Right, I'm not sure if there's a coherent philosophy to come out of them all. Because it ends with the angry young men as well, who are a different kettle of fish too. Chris Primer says, I watched Taste the Blood of Dracula, that's the Hammer horror film. While I enjoyed the movie, the expectation for libertine degeneracy will never stand up to Salo. Hargood seemed to enjoy the prospect of whipping his daughter. Disgusting and immoral. Absolutely. I mean, the bad guys in Taste the Blood of Dracula are absolutely despicable, which is why I rated it quite highly, because it's a weird thing. It's like all the characters are bad in that, really. It's a very different kettle of fish to Salo, I would say. I mean, if you're comparing a Hammer horror film to Salo, your apples and oranges there. But yeah, Taste the Blood of Dracula. Arakeen Greenmoon says, if you're going to look at archetype, you may also want to look at the evolution of them and when an archetype got retired only for decades later to be revived in a new form. Well, I mean, this is one of the interesting things about the TV tropes, because if you, as a Shakespeare scholar, right, in my previous lives, I'm still a Shakespeare scholar. I'm going to be bringing out a Shakespeare book next year and a Shakespeare course soon. Whenever I get a chance. There's the four humours, right? You can get the melancholic man, the choleric man, the phlegmatic man, and the, what's the other one? The sanguine man, right? And many of the modern TV trope archetypes also map onto the four classical humours that the likes of Shakespeare and previous playwrights would have used as well, which I find really interesting. In fact, I find myself at like 4 a.m. on TV Tropes, and it's like the four different Blackadders, you know, Blackadder the first, second, third, and fourth, each map on to a different humour. I was like, wow, that is mind-blowing, and it's also true. Even though three of them are deadpan snarkers, right? So even though the personality is deadpan snarker, you can have a choleric deadpan snarker, you can have a melancholic one, you can have a phlegmatic one, etc., etc. So, yeah, kind of interesting. All right. Let us have a look. I think that is it. I think that is it for Super Chats. We're just past an hour. Lamented Guide has sent a super sticker. I never know what super stickers are meant to do. Thanks for the super sticker. And Kevin Crow says, minorities were useful to elites to break up Catholic neighborhoods at a time when Catholics had become a majority in U.S. cities, hence legal birth control, for one. See E. Michael Jones's Slaughter of the Cities. Yes, I'm sure that is true. But also, I will always, whenever E. Michael Jones comes up, he's always writing from a Catholic angle. I will also note that I've got another book here called The Dispossessed Majority, which traces how Catholics, how the Ellis Island crew, Italians and Irish and so on, were used in exactly the same way that E. Michael Jones talks about in a previous generation. So this is one of those fascinating things, really, is that there's several generations of immigration deep into these parlor games that we're talking about. You know, that's a really interesting book because he talks about like what was the actual kind of effect on the community to suddenly have all these Irish there or all these Italians there. Italians bought their organized crime. Irish bought their kind of, you know, they're pretty well organized, the Irish, using the Catholic Church, funny enough, unions, police, stuff like that. And this book, Dispossessed Majority, has got a chapter on each and every group that comes in and their general effects on the WASP majority in America. One of the most interesting books I own is that. It's called The Dispossessed Majority. That is something. But yeah, E. Michael Jones does tell you a lot of the story, but in a way, how can I put this? E. Michael Jones is a little bit biased towards the moment of his own childhood, which is something that we all have in a way. I am biased towards the moment of my own childhood, right? I'm always looking back to the 80s and the 90s. Everybody does this. It's kind of natural, but it's also like could be a blind spot, right? And I think E. Michael Jones has got a little bit of a blind spot when it comes to that story that the Dispossessed Majority talks about. Anyway, thank you very much. This is the end of the Goblin Raid. The Goblin Raid. And pick up a course at the Academic Agency. I'll have a video out tomorrow, but there'll be no office hours. In terms of live stream, there'll be Adam Curtis review on Wednesday. Also, the Wednesday video, what is slop and what is not slop. Don't miss that one. And I'll see you tomorrow.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.